racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Hello, I'm Craig Revell.
I'm Colin Ford.
And I'm Peter Norton. Welcome to this week's episode of Inside Motorsport.
Thanks for joining us this week on Inside Motorsport. Well, we will look back at the Honda Indy 300 from last weekend as we have a few more reports from Howard Revell, who was covering the racing for us. Of course, by the time the press conferences finished last weekend, we'd gone off air, so that's why we didn't file more stories from Howard last weekend. But this gives us an opportunity to hear from a few of the different drivers involved. Also on the show this week, we look back at Rally Australia. We'll have a chat with Neville Wilkinson about the V8X magazine, which has just hit the stands, and also a preview to the New Zealand round of the Shell Series. We will also catch up with Chris Nixon as they build up towards their climax for the first year of a number of Procar standalone meetings at Oran Park in just a few weeks' time. But first, Howard Revell had a chance to talk to Elio Castro Neves, of course, the Indianapolis 500 winner from this year, and started by asking him what are the most difficult parts of the Honda Indy circuit.
I think the traction thing is a very difficult one because you can gain a lot of time and because of the high curves and bumps as well on the surface, you really tend to find in that spot. I guess that's it for me. But every issue this circuit matters because it's a long way and you might find every inch to make sure you can go fast.
With the curves, do you use them very much at all for corners and
things? They do, I think it's because of the highness now, it's pretty high, there's going to be everybody like more smooth kind of grass over the curve, so hopefully that strategy works and we just have to wait and see.
Do you think they've changed the height of the curve compared to last year?
I think it was pretty much the same. I don't think it would be changed. They did a good job in terms of moving away the walls and build up little curves on the, especially on the slow section. So I guess that's, and also the circuit. So it's a new surface on the back part of the circuit. I guess that was definitely a big improvement.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Chris Nixon from Procar Australia, and of course the final round of the championship is now on at Oran Park as we get set for what is going to be an exciting climax. Jim Richards has got his title on the line and is probably in a safe position, but Paul Stokel's form at Indy is certainly going to really make this race in Nations Cup a very exciting one.
G'day Craig, it'll be round 5 of the Procar Champ Series and round 8 of the Nations Cup Championship, as you mentioned, and I don't think Jim Richards has got to do much more than really protect his point score to ensure that he emerges with his second consecutive Nations Cup Championship.
For the rest of the divisions, though, they've all got different standings in their championship, and Mick Donohue, who has really made a bit of a name for himself since the Sylvania Waters incident in the Brutes, where he's certainly become one of the hard-nosed competitors of that division.
Well, he has. He's driving a Falcon, incidentally, and Mick, of course, is well-known for driving the Ultratune Commodore in V8 supercars for so many years, but he switched to Ford and has done a very good job. Incidentally, Ford, at this stage in the championship, have 8 wins to Holden's 7. So despite the fact that the Commodore has the 5.7-litre engine, it's the Falcons that are showing the way at the moment, but only just.
Well, of course, Philip Pilates winning in a Commodore up there at the Indy Carnival, and John Bowne not coming back, as we have discussed on this program, certainly it is going to allow the Peters Boatwright Subarus to put themselves right up into contention, and just amazing what a comeback Philip Pilates has had through the year.
Well, I think that's been a story of great grit and determination this year. Everybody knows now, of course, that Philip had his car stolen after the second round and borrowed a car for Canberra and then reappeared at Queensland Raceway with a new car that was paid for basically with the deposit for the house he had intended to buy. he's done very well since then and really fought his way back into contention. And I suppose his greatest achievement was to win the second of the GT performance races at Indy last weekend. That was a great achievement. He was extremely pleased to beat John Bauer, albeit in controversial circumstances. And the championship, however, is out of Phillip's reach. It almost inevitably will go to Brett Peters at the final round, as long as he finishes the races, I'd say.
Mm. Of course, in the performance this year, Peters, Boatwright, both in Subarus have been really going at it. You had Mark King, the defending champion, just hoping this year will end because he has had a disgusting year by his standards.
Just happens that way, doesn't it, Craig? I think it's worth pointing out, though, that this will be the first championship for Subaru, which has been a championship stalwart for so many years. We've always seen WRXs in there, but they didn't win their first race until last year, and that was the one that Boatwright won by default at Oran Park after Rick Shaw was suspended from the results. But they have had a very strong year this year with Peters, really a runaway winner by dint of a very consistent performance, not only race wins, but he has pretty much managed to finish every race and has racked up those points, just like Jim has in Nations Cup. Jim's not won too many races, but he sure knows how to stack those points away.
Darrell Coon wrapped up the championship down in Sandown for Class D competitors, but Robert Chadwick took the honours up there at Carnival.
No,
it wasn't Robert Chadwick. It was
Nathan Pelkington took the honours overall in the Hippies High Performance class the Sports Touring class at Indy, and he is now the new Class B champion, Craig. There were two races at Indy. Pilkington won one in the Mitsubishi FTO, and Nathan Thomas won the other in the Honda Integra Type R. But Pilkington is another one of those drivers who has had an extremely consistent and successful year, a great finishing record, and just totted up those points round by round by round. And for his rookie season in GTP racing, he's probably a pretty happy man to have scored the championship before he needs to go to the final round.
Mm. And of course, Scott Loadsman has had a whale of a year with his brand new Commodore.
Yes, he has, but that's been a great class this year. Brian Carr, John McElroy, who are two Falcon drivers, and Loadsman and 5.7 Commodore have had a pretty ding-dong all year. I think it's probably going to go Scott's way, but in the V8 Touring class, but we'll have to wait to Oran Park. None of the championships, except those two class championships we've discussed, is at this stage finalised, and anything can happen. Guys sometimes don't arrive at the circuit because they've run out of sponsorship money or they've had a last-minute mechanical problem, and they have to finish two races to get the points. So Oran Park is going to see the championship concluded for Nations Cup, for GT Performance Class A and outright, for GT Production Class D, Class C and Class E. And it will not see the resolution of the championship for the V8 Brutes, because it will be a non-championship round, and their final round will be at the V8 Ultimate at Sandown on the 2nd of December.
It is going to be a fantastic conclusion to this year's racing, and of course the details, we'll be giving you more details as they come to hand, but Oran Park on the 23rd to the 25th of November, we get to see the entire Procar series back in New South Wales, and certainly well worth a trip up the road for that final round.
That's correct. I should add, by the way, that there had been some discussion and some publicity about that event being a night race meeting with the final championship rounds on Saturday night, the 24th. That idea has been abandoned due to the probable competition from a major rock concert in Sydney. The organisers have reverted to a conventional three-day format, so all the championship rounds will be on the Sunday at Oran Park. That's the 25th of November.
Well, Chris, we'll be certainly speaking about that more as the week draws to hand, but just to remind everyone to get set, leave that 23rd to 25th of November open, because Procar back in New South Wales, it's going to be a ripper of a race, as most of the Procar races have been right throughout this year.
Thanks so much, Craig. We'll catch you later.
Well, joining us now on the line is Paul Marinelli from Rally Australia. And Paul, Marcus Gromholm this year gets to actually taste the champagne of success, unlike last year where he was unfortunately, he was fortunately, but for Tommy Mackinnon, unfortunately disqualified, which made the decision.
Yes, quite right, Craig. Hi, I hope you're well. Here at Rally Australia, it's been an amazing 3 days, and Gronholm well and truly earning this victory. Not that he didn't last year, of course, as you say, Mackinnon was disqualified, but Gronholm drove one hell of a rally. Once he got the lead, nobody really came near him. It was a very slender lead at day two, only about 3.2, 3.5 seconds, but he kept building and building and building on it, and of course he won today by 40.4 seconds in the Peugeot 206 from England's Richard Burns and the Subaru Impreza. Burns has kept his title hopes alive by finishing second here. Didier Auriol in third, the next Peugeot 206. There are three Peugeots in the top four. Harry Rovanperä from Finland finishing fourth. Colin McRae in fifth. And there's a story for you in the Ford Focus. He would have, in my opinion, been either the winner or second placed had he not turned up late to the starting draw, which earned him a penalty as being first on the road for every stage. And that basically slowed him up. So it was a good fight back, but a little bit silly for turning up late and basically costing him the championship, because if he doesn't win it in Britain. But I'll get on to that. Mackinnon has finished sixth. Tommy Mackinnon, the four-time world champion, and in his Mitsubishi Lancer. It's a great effort there and a good fight back from him over the second and third days of the event.
This rally was a trial for some new regulations which they have been talking about to stop some of the hedging that goes on in previous World Rally Championships. The trial was that the leader at the end of each day could pick his seeding position for the following day, as opposed to the leader always leading off each and every stage. The roads in Western Australia are notoriously slippery. How was this viewed by firstly the drivers and then by race officials at the end of the weekend?
Well, it worked for everybody except your tenth or 12th, 13th fastest guys, because they were always going to be last to start in the group, you know, because obviously the fastest guy gets to choose his spot first. He chooses 14th, and then it goes down from there. But what it does do is ensure that the guys who are fighting for the victory of the event are the people that you have a close fight with when you get to day three. There is no doubt at all that it is far better in terms of the guys fighting for the championship and fighting for the victory of the event to be closer and to have a closer fight all the way to the end. So I think it's worked fantastically. I feel sorry, of course, for the Hyundai guys who were always starting down back at 10th, 11th, 12th. Kenneth Erickson being one of them, a former Rally Australia winner, I should add. He finished 12th, for example. I don't think there was any chance of him moving up higher because of his starting spot. But how do you get a better starting spot? You finish higher in the rallies, and it's an incentive for people to get into that top 10 and be able to choose where they start, put some other people out in front. And of course it only is something characteristic for here in Australia. It had to be done because the way it was before, you were basically penalised for being the quickest, because you went out there first, you'd lose a second a kilometre at least, and you couldn't win.
The rule change was only one thing that was on everyone's mind. Of course, tyres are always a critical factor, and 3 dry days over in the West meant for, and a dry lead up to this event has meant for just a lot of that shale and build up on the roads. And I know the Michelin people were probably working overtime to make sure they had the right combinations.
They certainly were. They brought a number of combinations here, and you're right, it was very dry. We had some rain yesterday. It downpoured a bit during stage 12, but certainly not enough to cause any concern, or in fact it wasn't enough to make the drivers happy. They wanted a bit more rain so then they could get some more grip. I know it sounds silly, but it's true. Because of the gravel and the way it is here, it doesn't compact because it is so fine. And what the water does is help it all compact a bit more and give you more grip. So believe it or not, rain's quite a good thing here. So there wasn't enough of that, as you say, and a few drivers were complaining about visibility with dust and that sort of thing, but I think overall the event turned out as good as it possibly could. The only downside, of course, was Francois Delacour's crash, and his co-driver Daniel Grutterloop is still in hospital now. He's got a number of injuries, but nothing serious, although a broken collarbone, broken ribs, collapsed a minor collapse of the lung and a broken shoulder blade are among his injuries. So certainly, not, you know, I wouldn't go calling it minor, but at the same time, he's in good spirits and he'll have to spend a few more days here in the Perth sunshine before he goes home.
This is another interesting issue that's been raised because of that very heavy accident, which was at Corsica. Now we have another accident here in Australia. Obviously, the technical committee over the winter months of the English season will be having to look at how can we make these cars safer when we have two big-name stars having such horrific accidents.
Yeah, I mean, they can do whatever they can, and obviously everybody welcomes safety enhancements in any form of motorsport, but I think when you're rallying and at some of the venues they race at, like Corsica and so forth, I think it's more to look at where you're racing at, as opposed to making, I mean, obviously if the cars can be any safer, yeah, fantastic, but I think the very nature of what these guys do and the speeds that they do it at and trees and all sorts of things all around, cliffs and all the rest of it, you're never going to get it absolutely safe. Unfortunately, that's the same story that goes with any form of motorsport, and anyone that doesn't believe that is only kidding themselves. But, yeah, any improvements they can do, the better, but I don't think you'll ever stop that. You won't stop people getting hurt. You won't stop people getting even, perhaps, even killed.
Well, as we look down, the WRC cars and the Group A is what the crowd really are enthusiastic about seeing, the noise, the grunt, the dust flying. But in Group N, that's something that Australia's been very successful at their own rally.
Absolutely. Ed Ordinski taking his record eighth Group N victory. I mean, we've really got to take our hats off to how good the South Australian driver really is for the Mitsubishi Rally Art team. Eighth straight, cool, calm and collected throughout the rally, never panicked. He's finished 17th overall in a car that you and I are well aware has, you know, really has no business being up there that high. It's a great effort. And the first Australian home as well. The second Australian home was Cody Crocker from Victoria in the Subaru Impreza, 21st. The third Australian home was Dean Herridge. He's from here in Perth in a Subaru Impreza, a second generation rally driver, I should say, too. And he's finished 24th overall.
One of the biggest surprises as we went through this weekend was the news that that Possum Bourne had a mechanical failure. He's been so indestructible in the Australian Rally Championship and over in New Zealand and in Asia Pacific events. I can't remember the last time that he has had such a had such a disastrous run.
Well, yeah, it's been a bit of bad luck. He was running within the top 10 on the first day. It was looking real good, as he usually does. He's always well up there. And an engine failure on the morning, on the Saturday morning, we heard about that. Yeah, not good. But one of those things, he had another engine give way on him. I think when testing for the round went on one of the practice runs, and they changed and got a pro drive engine into the car, and of course that's died on them as well. So the luck was not going to come to the sixth time Australian champion this time around, Possum Bourne. We missed him from the final results, but having said that, it's racing, and stranger things have happened.
And of course, Canberra's Neil Bates in his final much vaunted drive for Toyota, he also had an early exit.
Yes, and he was running around the 13th, 14th mark when that happened. He was going extremely well. He was clearly the fastest Australian in there. And crash and roll, unfortunately, I'm glad to report that Neil and Coral are fine. And a sad way to end their last race for Toyota, but certainly they were as strong as the best of them when they went out.
Yes, and well, we concentrate now on the for World Rally Championship standings on the Rally of Great Britain. Now, I believe I'm hearing that there is actually a change in the Rally of Great Britain for next year, where it won't be based around the Wales area as it has been for so many years now.
Well, what I've been told is that it is in Wales, but who knows? Things can change all the time in motor racing and in rallying. But the beauty of what's happened here for England and for the English rally fans, the Europeans, is that Colin McRae, Richard Burns and Tommy Mackinnon will be fighting for winner takes all. Whichever one of those finishes in front of the other is going to take the 2001 World Rally Championship with them. So you couldn't ask for a better script for a fantastic rally, and you couldn't ask for a bigger contrast coming from Perth sunshine and heat over to the freezing cold and wet nature of that rally.
Well, Paul, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you as always here on Inside Motorsport, and we do wish you all a very safe trip back here to the eastern seaboard, where, of course, plenty of racing still to come in this summer.
Thank you very much, Craig. It's a pleasure, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
It's nice to have the Firestone Racing, and I'd like to welcome you over here, and showing about the weather today, but it'll get better. Tell me, Mark, what kind of tyres have you brought with you, and you might be able to tell us what you've got in the way of slicks and wet weathers?
As I'm sure people probably know, we're supplying the entire field this year, the second year in a row that we're supplying the entire field in the FedEx Championship Series. So we brought about 750 stick tires for the dry condition tires, and I guess it's good we also brought about 450 of the rain tires that the team can get up to 4 sets of rain tires throughout the course of the weekend, and they can, each car can get up to 7 sets of the dry tires throughout the course of the weekend.
So you have the situation where it is a wet track, so they're going to have enough tires.
Certainly the tires are pretty good. I said they, even what little they ran this morning, that's going to be used again, and it should not be a problem. And the only problem would be maybe if it did rain the entire weekend and they put on a lot of laps throughout the practice and qualifying throughout the course of the weekend. That has probably never occurred. And the forecast, I think, for tomorrow and Sunday is pretty good. So hopefully we'll be back in the sixth rest of the weekend.
Yeah, right. Now, Antoine, as you took to England and Germany, how does that rate against what you brought here?
Obviously, for England and Germany, we would not have brought any of the rain tires because they're being ovals. You know, we don't use the rain tires. But outside of that, the quantities for the dry tires would have been similar because you have the same number of cars obviously running. Each team would have gotten one additional set for the course of the weekend. Each team would have 8 sets because the races are a little bit longer for those two places than they were here.
And is there any change in the tire that were left this year compared to last year?
Actually not. The tires, we were very pleased with the performance of the tires throughout the course of the weekend last year. They played a pivotal role helping Adrian Fernandez win the race. So we were very confident bringing back the same tire specification. We've also run that same stack at a couple of other races, 3 course races earlier that performed very well. So we're very confident they'll do well this weekend.
Now, can you briefly explain the differences between a street tire to a natural circuit tire?
A street course tire to a road course, basically?
They're somewhat similar in setup, but obviously it
depends on the different, on the street course and the road course. More often than not, the road course can be a little longer than the street courses, and we have some more higher speed corners and higher speed straightaways, so we have to build in a little bit, maybe specific construction and maybe a little bit of hardability for the road courses. We have basically 2 versions. With the street courses, we have a softer, more grippy version, and then a harder, more durable version of tires for the street courses, and also the same for the road course. The street course tires we have are basically the softest tires we have of any that we use. And then it goes, the road goes a little bit harder, and then you get to the oval tires, which are even harder because they have to be even more durable, the set of beatings that they take on the ovals.
Now, with the old tires that are used after the weekend, what happens to them all?
We track and we get every tire returned to us because of the immense amount of technology and development that we put into the race tires. We make sure that all the tires are returned to us at the end of the weekend.
Then what happens to them when you take them back to the States?
They're all shipped back to the States, and then what happens is they eventually end up becoming fuel in cement kilns. So they're used to heat up the kilns that heat up the cement.
Okay, with no other supplying cartoons, has development slowed in Firestone?
It doesn't necessarily slow down, but it kind of focused in a different direction. When there is a competitor, you're always looking for speed and, you know, you want to go faster than the other guy is going. When you're in there by yourself and working in cooperation with cars, we're trying to develop tires that can maybe go a little bit longer. They can reduce the marbles, you know, that tire debris that builds up in the track to improve the racing. So that's kind of what we're focusing on now, is looking at trying ways to help the racing in general and help put on a better show for the fans.
Now, how is this technology passed on to the general motoring?
There are a lot of things that are passed on eventually to the passenger car tires that we build. In general, over the past few years, tires with lower, wider profiles.
outside in the car. That's compounding that we do a lot of compounding, especially now that we are building cars more for the durability and lasting longer. Some of the fixtures that you can right here can definitely be the difference with that on the with that car. So there's definitely a benefit for the first people who are sitting here watching the fans. There's a benefit to them down the road somewhere in the passenger car tires.
Now, with the AAA offshore that regulators that have in the rules, how is that offset in the balancing? Like if like a little fitting which is screwed in one side of the rim, the rim's made so that there's lighter on one side than the other. Do you know that at all?
Yes, are the wheel balance itself?
No, in the rim I had a little sensor.
Yes.
And at the front, how the rims know that they rise on one side, because quite actually that little sensor in one side is going to throw the wheel out of balance. Do you know how they...
I would assume, I'm not very sure on this, but I would assume that it would be balanced maybe a little bit lighter on that side that the sensor is on, which is the tire pressure sensor. So we also would balance on the other side. So I know that we do computer balance all the, well, after we mount the tires, we do computer balance and within 1/10 of an hour.
Well, thank you very much for your time and have a good day here.
Thank you very much.
Neville Wilkinson from V8X Magazine joins us on the line now, and after all the, well, the action and excitement of Indy, the V8 supercars are now on the boat heading over to New Zealand, just in time for the release of the latest edition of V8X Magazine.
Good afternoon, everybody. Yes, definitely on the water, and yes, VX is definitely on the water over to New Zealand as well, but it's already on the shelf out here. The latest issue is just out.
Of course, you look at all the events right through to the big finish at Bathurst, the 1000, and of course previewing the V8 Ultimate at Sandown Raceway coming up a little bit later in the year.
That's right. We were actually looking at doing a preview for New Zealand, but it was very touch and go whether it was going to be out in time just for New Zealand. So we thought the punters would get better value for money if we did a preview on Sandown. But yeah, this one's got, Junior or Steve Johnson on the cover. And, it's also got the big Bathurst wrap in the magazine, and there's the Bathurst HRT Kicks Butt on the front cover as well. And also a story on basically just, we've got grid girls and stuff like that. We've got all the round reports, all that kind of stuff. We've also got a story on Channel 10 and what their plans are for next year. We've got a story on Big Kev, mind you. It's not just Paul Morris. It's a story about Big Kev and the racing team, and that's quite interesting on what people think of Big Kev. We went around and asked a few punters of what they thought was Big Kev, and it's quite interesting the reaction we got.
Of course, you also look at a whole weekend for a V8 racing fan at the top of the mountain. And I guess the other thing is Mark Osler's report on Junior Johnson and, of course, how he has really developed right throughout the season this year.
Well, that's right. It's called Don't Call Me Junior. Well, on the cover it is, and it's Steve Johnson's year from zero to hero. And that's basically what it's all about. He's just come on strong this year, and we thought this is a story that has to be told. And basically we look into what's different this year from all the other years. And we go and ask Steve those questions, and he tells us a lot of it's fitness, a lot of it's the way you think about your motorsport, the way you approach it, the team. I mean, I don't think the Shell team's got that much better. I just think it's a mental thing. The Shell team's always been on top. And he's basically come of age. I mean, he's proven that he's a winning race driver, and if he keeps this up, he's going to be around for a lot of years to come.
Mm. Of course, as the cars head over to New Zealand, what's the feedback? Of course, some people are saying that Silly Season's going to overbear this whole trip overseas.
Well, the Silly Season, it started after Bathurst, and it's gone quiet a bit at the moment. I think everybody's run out of rumours. And so it's like, the calm before the storm in New Zealand. I think a lot of Australia is going to be watching the New Zealand round. It's the first round outside of Australia, the first actual championship round outside of Australia. I mean, obviously, the V8s have actually been over to New Zealand before for a two-race series, but this is the actual championship round, and a lot of Aussies are going to be glued to their televisions to see how it goes. I mean, this weekend is just going to be a huge weekend for Channel 10 in their ratings, because just think about it, every Aussie is going to be glued to the telly who's interested in V8 Supercar.
Mm. Of course, you're heading over there for V8X magazine to bring all the details back for us here on Inside Motorsport.
Most definitely. And I'm looking forward to it. I've never been to New Zealand. I'm keeping an eye on the weather in Auckland. I've got no idea what the weather is like in Auckland. I just hope it's kind of as warm as it is here.
And as you look forward to that trip away, of course, V8X.com.au is your home for news, where V8X Supercar Magazine is your home for features and articles.
Most definitely. If anybody wants to keep up with what's going on over in New Zealand and they're on the internet, log on to v8x.com.au. We're going to have updates every day. We're going to have updates on the practice, the qualifying, the whole thing. And I can imagine that there's going to be a lot of Aussies out there are going to be hungry for information, because the only way you're going to know what's going on is some stuff on television, which I assume Channel 10 is going to have some reports about it, and also the internet. I can't see much more on radio. There might be some in the daily newspapers, but that's going to be it. So, yeah, keep an eye on the websites if you can get access to one, because that's where most of the news is going to come from.
And with so many New Zealanders involved in V8 Supercars, you'll be looking towards your Greg Murphy, Simon Wills, and those sort of people who have run on this Pukehoe circuit to get a handle very quickly.
Definitely. Pukehoe is... I mean, Greg Murphy's won there before, and he's probably the highest-placed New Zealander in the championship, so he's regarded as probably one of the favourites going over there. He's with a good team. Obviously, Kmart is no slouch. And I think he'll go a lot better than who he went at Indy. Just a bit of a guess there. But, yeah, I mean, you've got John Faulkner, you've got Paul Radisich. Imagine that the Shell camp is just going to be inundated with Kiwis over there, because Paul Radisich is very popular. And, in fact, I'd reckon he's just as, if not more popular than Greg Murphy. But that's not saying, taking anything away from Greg. He is very popular over there. And we're finding out a bit about that with, you know, because V8X is starting to be sold over in New Zealand. We also think about now drivers from New Zealand to try and cater for some of the New Zealand market. But, the biggest market is still here in Australia. But, you know, we think about that type of thing now.
Mm. Well, Neville, it's going to be an interesting weekend next weekend as the cars will be unloaded throughout the week. And, of course, you can keep an eye on all the movings and shakings in V8 Supercars at v8x.com.au. Thanks for your time, and look forward to having a chat to you right over next weekend.
Been a pleasure.
Last weekend, Howard Revell was at the Gold Coast Indy, and he caught up with the Australian-New Zealand driver. Of course, like anything else that's good out of New Zealand, Australia claims it immediately. And he spoke to Scott Dixon about the step up from Indy Lights to Champ Cars this season.
Obviously, the cars are a little different, but not so much in the systems of driving and things like that. It's too much of a change. The cars sort of, after a little while, but it's so many things you can change mechanically, and then, you know, with the engine, just to adjust the car to how you like it, and then, you know, also the racing, you know, with the stop strategies and things like that.
You make many changes during the race to the chassis yourself?
Well, in the race, it's definitely kind of hard. You can pretty much do wings and tire pressure. You got roll bars and the golf press on the overview and a weight jacket. So, if you generally don't have a very close, you know, sort of balance, it's going to be hard.
How do you find running on the oval compared to the street circuit?
The oval's not too bad. You know, if you've got a good car, they're always fun, you know, fun to drive on. But Michigan this year, the car was terrible, and you just don't know if you're going to make the round. It's a bit of a handful when you're at that
stage. Okay, thank you.
Earlier in the weekend, before Gildy Ferrin went on to win the CART FedEx Championship, Howard Revell caught up with him and asked him about how comfortable he is doing interviews in English, and then straight away in Portuguese, of course, coming from Brazil, the champion, does speak both languages extremely well.
It's not hard at all.
And of course, the other thing that plays on a lot of drivers' minds is the Alex Zanardi incident over there in Germany in their first visit to the German track. Howard found out how Gilles Deferrin copes with that on a race weekend.
Something you've got to wipe that out of your mind, because what happened here in the past, through with what could happen here on Sunday, I think the way I look at it is, we had a good car here last year, we were in the qualifying control, and so that makes me confident that we ought to be relatively close to the pace here. Hopefully we'll qualify in the top two or three rows, and you got to take it from there. What happened here last year on the home start, it was really not something that kind of stayed in my mind. It's only a half reminder of the risk that we're under. We have to each and every one of us has to analyze how the group was handled the whole thing. I was aware of the risk.
Something that we've enjoyed bringing you each and every week during the Formula One season has been the press conferences from right around the world. Well, this weekend we get to see how a kart press conference is handled with, of course, the results from the Honda Indy.
Michael finished runner-up today in the Motorola Honda Renard. It is his fifth podium of the season, 94th of his career. He also moves from fourth into a tie for third in the championship with Elio at 141 points. Mike, fifth top five finish in the last seven starts. You made a nice run here, second half of the season. Just take us through your day and some of the key highlights for you, please.
Well, it was a pretty good day. It was a quiet day, but we got pretty lucky on that first yellow. We just hit it right before it came in, so some guys got caught with the pit the enclosure, so that helped us a little bit. And then the second stop, we did another good stop there. We made up some ground on some guys, and I was able to pass Roberto, and then able to pass Tig as well, I think. And so it was good. We were able to attack, and we were really running Cristiano down there in the end, but then the guys came on the radio and said that I had to start saving fuel to make it to the end of the race, so that was pretty much it. I think that was with about 10 or 12 laps to go, which was a little disappointing, because I think we had a car capable of catching him, so it's just the way it goes. I'm so happy that we're second. Team Motorola did a great job with pit stops and the cars the way they did it, so it was good. And Honda engine ran good, tires were awesome, the Firestone tires, so it was a good day for us. And I feel good doing it here, for Bally and Tim, in their home country and all, so I was pretty happy about that. And also I want to congratulate Jules for a great year. He did a good job this year, and to win the championship the way he did, he deserved it.
We'll open for questions. Lewis?
It seemed like the last pit stop, there was enough time to go full rich to the end. Were you too rich early on the last stint?
Yeah, I was running rich early, and we were catching. I don't know, they made a short pill that to try to gain me time in the pit, which helped me because I was able to get by Roberto. In the end, I wasn't able to run him down because I had to save fuel. So, but, you know, I think it was a good strategy anyway, because if I wouldn't have been able to get by Roberto and then, it might have held me up and I might not have finished second. So I think it was a good strategy.
Alex and Cristiano now join us. Alex finished third today in the Players Index Ford Renard. Second podium of the season. His other was a runner-up finish at Toronto. Also ends a five-race pointless drought. Tag, for you, you've had a great road street course car for several races. Had some tough luck, qualified well today. You finally got up here on the podium.
Yeah, I'm pretty pleased. The Players team is really strong. We qualified top five for many races on the road course. We had a great car in Vancouver. That race was ours, and we just had bad luck here. We had a strong run as well. Just had a great fight with Michael at the beginning of the race, at the start, and also when I pick up a little bit of marbles, we did some really clean running, so it's pretty good. And towards the end of the race, I got stuck behind Jill and Paul for quite a bit, and I was running 1:35.8 lap time, and by myself, I was in the 34.3. So I was losing a lot of time, and Neil McElroy was on the radio saying, "You need to get by Jill. It's very hard to pass." So I was trying really hard, and I didn't want to do anything bad to his championship. So I passed him clean and back straight away, and same thing for Paul. And I was catching Michael towards the end, but it was really difficult. It's just a good run. You know, the first team is strong, and if we are able to start the season next year the way we are doing right now, we're pretty strong contenders.
Our champion is Cristiano in the Texaco Haviland K-Mark Toyota Lola. Margin of victory, 5.786 seconds. Average speed, 97.511 miles per hour. That is a new track record. Previous mark, 1999, 91.849 miles per hour. Second victory of the season, third of his career. Other victories, Mexico this year in the season opener, Chicago last year. Fifth win of the season for Toyota, first ever at Surfer. 11th different winner in 11 events here at Surfer. Cristiano, I heard you had a little butt with Tony, so this is going to cost you a bike, but you won $100,000, so I'm sure you can afford it today.
Again. I had this butt with him at the beginning of the year because I was pretty sure he was going to win a couple of races too. And I'm actually pretty mad that the guy hasn't been able to win a race yet. Finish up there, he's been on pole, he's been third, he's been on the podium, but he hasn't been able to win. So I'm going to have to give him the second bicycle of the season, and I still didn't get any. But it's a pretty good deal for me. If I have to give him 20 bicycles, it's going to be all my pleasure. prefer to give him a bicycle and get the race win than get a bicycle from him and let him in the race.
Tonight at the party, it's all on Cristiano.
Fine.
Record crowd today, 110,187. 4-day record crowd as well, 286,610. Cristiano, you win in Mexico, 100,000. You don't win unless you get 100,000 plus, do you?
Yeah, I think my performance is very related to the amount of people that is watching the race. I think I'm the kind of guy that likes to show off a little bit, right? The race is there's not many people, but it's great. Coincidence or not, it's just awesome to win those kind of races because, of course, the more people that are on the racetrack, the more you enjoy winning the race. The more people become marketing, enjoy watching you more, you get more of a following. It's great. I'm still looking for my big win in the United States this year because I only had my last one in Chicago last year, and this year I'm doing only races outside the U.S. So coming back to Fontana now, I'm going to get my last chance.
$1 million too.
Yeah, plus the prize money is quite attractive, let's put it like this. And I think the team really needed that win. Hopefully we're going to be carrying this momentum. We picked up here to Fontana. We're just about to get in the pit stop competition too. I don't know how that ended up, if we get it or not. Probably yes, because I don't think Serbia finished the race and he was on the contenders. So it's another thing that we might get a shot on the pit stop competition. I think we're going to be in that.
Also move up in the bonus fun. You move to fifth in the championship. We'll open for questions. We have a roving mic, so just wait for the mic to get to you, and we'll get started.
Yeah, Cristiano, before Moreno had his transmission problems, did you have some kind of fuel strategy going there to catch up with him?
Well, I couldn't quite follow the pace. Drew and him got in the first stint. I was following back, I think about 3 seconds or 2.5 seconds, something like that. And I had the target mileage. So I had, there was a way I could go a little richer, but I don't think it was going to be the way to go. I stopped in the same lap as Moreno. He was able, I think, to go faster and get the same mileage as me. And so we still had to work on that a little bit. To have his, on the second stint, I was actually getting a very good mileage because I was behind Jill. I couldn't get even close for him to him to get to a point where I could apply something on the track. So I just had to save as much fuel as I could. And, but at the same time, Paul that was behind me, he couldn't get very close to me either. So I was in a pretty comfortable position to save fuel. So I made a good mileage that stint. I think that's one of the big things that got us the racing. I was able to pass Moreno 2 laps before I got into the pits. Joe stopped, I think, 2 laps earlier than I did. So everything ended up working perfectly all the way.
What's it like coming to Australia compared to the other countries you've been competing in?
Well, win a race is win a race, whatever it is, you know. It's just a great feeling, but in Australia, I would say there's a special taste because we got here so much earlier, we get to make friends here, we get to know a lot of people, so it becomes almost like a racing at home. Even though it's so far away, it's like a 24-hour trip back to Brazil where I'm from, it almost feels like home because it's like you have your friends, you go to these guys' houses, you know a lot of people, you go to dinner, and you spend a long time here. I've been here since last Friday, so it's been 10 days I've been here, and it's really good. You start enjoying the place, you just get to know everything, and when you come to the track, you see so many people, they enjoy so much our kind of racing, the open wheel racing. Our race is obviously very close, very competitive, a lot more testing than I think they're used to watch. It's good to see that they enjoy so much, so there is a special taste, it's good.
Next question, Brad.
Question for Tag. First part of the season wasn't that good for your team, but the second half has really come around. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we, it's really difficult in kart because you need to be consistent. If you score points every race, you look good in the points. We had 0 points after 6 races, so that was really bad. And after that, we had 7 races in a row with in between the points, starting from the second place in China. But after that, when you need to catch up, as the DNF is opening a lot, like Vancouver, we were leading the race, and with 15 laps to go, we broke Robot, and Germany, same thing, Houston, same thing, we're running second, so that's a lot of points that we lost there, and it's really tough to catch up, but the team is really running strong. We qualified in the top 5 for the last 8 events. Our worst qualifying was 8 in Laguna, so really pleased with the competitivity of our cars, and the team has changed quite a bit. So I really think that if we can start the season next year on the road course the way we are doing right now, we're going to be pretty good contenders.
Tony?
Michael, this is the first time I think in 11 years that we've had no red flag. So a clean race, what difference did that make to you on the track today?
I don't know. I think everybody's doing really well today, you know, for whatever reason. It's funny how it goes. Maybe it wasn't a full moon this weekend, but everybody really behaved out there, and, you know, and when that happens, we have good racing, and we don't have all those yellow flags that mess the racing up. So, you know, it was a nice, clean race today.
Mike, a quick follow-up. Since you've dominated other tracks and won at tracks, what makes it so difficult to repeat here? I mean, 11 consecutive years, no one has repeated.
Good question. You know, there's no reason. I mean, there's nothing to explain. It's just the way it worked out for whatever reason. You know, and why have I won 7 times at Toronto? You know, it's just the way it's happened. You know, I don't think there's any real reason. It's just the way the ball bounces.
Next question.
This is for Tag and Cristiano. Kind of the same question. 2 yellow flags. Is there a very strong warning in the drivers' meeting, or you guys drove well? You drove a very clean race today.
Yeah, I did some great fights with Mike and also with Paul and Gilles. So on a track where the road is really round and you can bottom when you try to pass, it's really difficult to try, and there was a lot of marbles out there as well. So I think it was a really clean race, and you know, at the end of the season, I guess everybody wants to score points and drive as soon as possible, but it definitely shows that, you know, with our cars and in our team, we can put up a good show if we're running clean together.
Next question. Mark.
Phil's a great driver, you know, well deserving of the 2 championships that he's had. I think he lifted a little bit of credit as well to Team Penske. I think they've really stepped up their game the last couple of years, and they've done a tremendous job as well. But you know, I think Phil's been very deserving, and you know, he does the series proud, I think, as a champion as well.
Next question. Any final questions? Gentleman in the front.
Just wondering, Patrick was talking about brake problems this morning. Did you suffer any brake problems at all?
Well, definitely it's a tough track on brakes. I feel that we had a lot of tab nut back, and the pedal was going really down halfway through the race, but I was pumping the pedal quite a bit to be really good on brakes, and changed the brake valve a couple of times. I lost the rear, lost front, but I think it's just a question also the way your car is set up, and our car was really, really strong. I mean, you know, you don't need to brake really deep to go fast, and just be conservative and try to be nice on the brake, and we still do pretty good lap times. So, I mean, I didn't have a really major problem.
Right now we'll cut loose our top 3 for one-on-ones for about 5 to 10 minutes, then we're going to bring Jill in. Gentlemen, congratulations.
We're going to get started with our new champion, Jill DeBarrett. You know, my wife and her kids, she's in England and in Florida.
Jill, the fair Owen of Marlboro Fume Penske joins us. He is our 2001 FedEx Championship Series champion. He clinches the title by virtue of a 28-point lead, 191-163 over Kenny Breck, with one race remaining and only 22 points remaining on the board. He becomes only the fourth driver in kart history to win consecutive championships. The others, Rick Mears, 1981-82, Bobby Rahal, 1986-1987, Alex Zanardi, 1997-1998. Here is the Vanderbilt Cup, as well as a $1 million bonus for the title. It is the ninth series title for Penske Racing, and it's also Honda's sixth consecutive Drivers' Championship. Jill, kind of sweet redemption to clinch the title here, considering the luck you've had here, and you join an exclusive group, becoming only the fourth back-to-back champion. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mike. I guess he hasn't completely sunk in yet. You know, it's all I can think of that I'm a very fortunate person, you know, to be driving for a guy like Roger and for a team like the one we have. And all I can think of is how much I like these guys, you know, and how much they mean to me, because, you know, it's really through them that I'm able to meet to me, I'm like living in a dream, you know. Since I joined the team, I guess 2 years ago, my life is really wonderful, you know, both from a personal and a professional standpoint. And, you know, obviously, I guess I've been able to drive better and keep reaching for new heights. Even though I've got a lot of gray hair, I feel like I'm super better. And I feel this means a lot to me. I mean, no, never in a million years I would have thought that I was going to achieve this much success. And, you know, when I started years ago as a kid, you know, to me, guys that had that much championship like this, they were like, you know, people that, you know, put posters in the wall in your bedroom and stuff, you know, and for me to be speaking here as a two-time champion is very special. So I guess you keep going. I had a good race today, and you know, I was just running my own pace out there, and I had a lot of issues to contend with, and you know, we had a good start today, and you know, we got to the braking area ahead of Moreno, so I thought, well, you know, I'll just break here, and if he's on the inside, I let him go, and if he's not, I'll turn. and you know, he was fantastic, I have to say. I mean, he didn't push to show anything like that, and I turned, and there was room for everybody, and there was no problem there, and thankfully, well, we went through the first turn okay, and got a clean first lap. And, you know, from there on, I was just, pushing hard, trying not to make a mistake. The car was very good at that point, and everything was running well. Then in the middle of the second stint, you know, we came in, a lot early, and then we lost the lead, but that was okay. And then we knew exactly what we were doing out there, and then that's all, believe it or not, fun. And everything was fine, and then I started placing my brake pad troubles, and then the pedals started to go fine quite a bit, and started to
last couple of years in Alaska, and we had a couple of big moments out there. And so I didn't need at that point on, and I was just really nursing the car as much as I could, and trying to make to take care of the gearbox and trying to take care of the brakes. And everything was okay, so I had to deal with this brake issue on the way to the end of the race. And at the end, a little bit of an issue there with the motor, so I had to be careful in that too. So, everything held up fine, and we were happy. I mean, certainly, it's never over until it's over, because I had it all under control, really. I mean, I could have nobody in front of me, which is how I wanted, because of my brake problems. You know, every time I had somebody in front of me, my brakes would just, disappear, basically. And so the tag and pole, they were off in the distance, and that was very good. And then, the last lap, pole had some sort of problem. I had to go back and all over the air, and I almost fell off 2 corners to go.
That was excellent.
Thank you.
So with Tony,
a wonderful emotional moment for you at the end of the race there, on the phone to your wife, I think, and all those fantastic fans howling for you. So thanks, weren't they great?
You have to keep everything kind of, I guess, bottled up is not really the right word, but you have to put it away from your mind, all the emotions that you may have, what it may mean to you from a personal level and everything, and all that. You have to try to wipe that out of your mind, and certainly, because you want them so much, it's difficult to exercise that, just to be as cool and as calculating as you can be. And I guess when you talk to people that you love, and you see all that party going on out there, it's hard to keep inside, and certainly after you take the checkered flag, it's like you open the floodgates and everything comes rushing in. So there's a very emotional moment for me.
Next question, Lewis. Gordon, I'm sorry.
Jill, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
You said you did get a good start. There was some sort of suggestion that you may have jumped the start. What's your perspective on that?
To be honest, we just kind of tried to accelerate together, and I was slightly ahead of that Moreno who was going by the line, so I thought maybe they won't take the way. But at that point you can't back off, because if you back off you got run over from the back. And I guess they threw the green, so I said, okay, well, we should keep going and see what happens. But I couldn't see exactly when we crossed the line, but I was either slightly ahead or just side by side with the Moreno. And I guess they figured they were very close together, so then they decided to throw the green, and then it's no big deal. I mean, having a piece up here is it's a bonus, if you see what I mean.
It's probably too soon to pick a defining moment this year. Last year, your championship, you said Houston. Can you find a defining moment in your championship this year?
I think, for me, it was England. I had a couple of accidents, big accidents that kept me out of the car for a long time on the preseason, in those oval tracks, and we were not doing particularly well in the ovals, it was certainly our weak point there. And we were scoring here and there, but we weren't that strong. And then in England, what a track, the type of track that we weren't doing all that great.
we decided to change everything, you know, and I was able to run an extremely competitive race and actually come out with about blood besides the win. So I think that because I think from there on, I thought, well, we should, you know, I was more confident in the other races, you know, and then I was, you know, hitting the nail right in the head, and this year was really important, and that third place in the game was also very important.
Next question.
You mentioned the gearbox on the rise, and the rideouts have been a little sensitive and a little delicate in the gearbox and ride courses this year. So was that a reaction to something that happened during this race, or did you go into the race today thinking I might have to nerf my box?
No, I mean, we went into the race thinking we had no problem. I mean, it's notoriously hard on equipment this race, but, you know, certainly as soon as I started having brake problems, let's not forget that I got to get to the end. So I was trying to drive as smoothly as I could, let's put it this way, you know, doing my heel and toe and just trying to do. I still remember my dad telling me when I was 13, he said, I do not want to feel your downshift. And I guess that's what I'm trying to take away. I was trying to down.
Zika.
Yeah, it's right. You finished, you had two podium finishes at the beginning of the season, but after the last, in the one point in the season, your standing was the eighth. You didn't really give up the championship at that moment. I mean, you didn't think about giving up anything. Never give up. As long as I'm alive, I don't give up, kind of thing. And, you know, as far as I was concerned, I mean, we were running very fast, very strongly. It's just that every weekend, we didn't really have a smooth weekend, I remember, all the way up until Toronto, you know, where everything went smoothly through practice and qualifying, and that sort of had a problem there in the race in Toronto, but everything was, seemed to be happening, most of it outside of our control, you know, red flag in qualifying and weather and stuff like that. So, I just kept my head together and, you know, you gotta keep going, you know, one day at a time. You know.
Next question.
Couple of things, Jill. Firstly, how much pressure were you under there from Kenny Brack? Because obviously he desperately had to get past.
To be honest, no problem. I mean, Roger suggested that I let him by that point there, but I didn't really want to do that because of my brake problems, you know, at the time, and I knew I was a lot faster than he was, so I was just driving, looking at the mirror, you know, and trying to lock as much distance as I could to pull and pat me anyway, so it was not particularly difficult to see anything.
Can you talk about how whether, in fact, it was more difficult to win the championship this year, and if that's the case, how much more satisfying it is?
I feel it was a very satisfying championship. You know, I felt that we were better this year than we were last year, and I guess the number of points that we have shows that. You know, I mean, we were consistently faster this year, and I guess it's it's a reflection of our second year together, you know, and the second year with the same group of guys, same chief mechanic, Matt Johnson, and all the guys, all the same mechanics, and same engineer, Tom German, who is, I have to say, is probably one of the brightest persons I ever came across, and I think we understand each other better, and we just running stronger all the time.
Lewis?
Yeah, Gilles, hate to remind you, but 2 years in a row, you never did a lap. You start okay, and then there's the yellow. Did you start to think, okay, what can go wrong now?
No, I tell you, when I run by the first lap, you're on the yellow, but yes. Well, step that I overcompleted here. So I'm on the plus already. So you just got to keep around the ball and take one step at a time. Sometimes I just wish this race, they were just like Formula 3 race, 20 laps, finish, half an hour, see you later, and go home. It's 2 hours, that's way too long.
Did you think twice about coming to Australia after the tourism tax in America? That concern you at all?
Not at all. Let's say that, we were in Germany when that whole thing happened, and it was a difficult time, not only for me, but most people in the community, they left their families behind, my wife and their two children were back in America. But once we got back and understood everything that was going on, I think it's important that we continue life as we once did, we got to keep going. And that's the way we live, and I always love coming here to Australia, and there was no way that they were going to keep me from coming here.
Jeremy?
Yes, just very quickly, first of all, congratulations. Just tell me about the pass of Moreno at the start of the race, please, and then one more question after that.
I had a good start, basically. I mean, when we had kind of accelerated together, and I guess I got a little bit of a jump on him there. And to be honest, I was in doubt whether they were going to throw the green or not, but I certainly wasn't about to back off. Primarily through safety concerns, more than trying to stay ahead of Moreno. Because, always when you get to that first turn, when he's a little too crowded, it's always trouble in there. But I guess we were kind of alongside close enough, and I drew the green. But by the time I was on the break, I was slightly ahead. And I thought to myself, well, I'm just going to break. I'll leave him plenty of room. I'm just going to break it. He's there. I won't turn. If he isn't, I'll turn. I braked, and I have all credit to Moreno. He was so pretty clean there. He just backed off the West Carolina line, and it was okay. I was going to try to stay ahead of him, but I wasn't about to fight him hard. Let's put it this way.
So you were at your head going into that first term, are you?
Yes, I was. Okay. And then, similar situation that I was still one last year, to be honest with you.
Emotionally you feel fantastic now, but physically, how are you feeling?
I'm not that great, to be quite honest with you. I have this a lot of bug ever since I arrived here, and my voice is a little funny, I guess. And nothing to go. So I was in a little sick when I got out of the car, but I'm improving, let's put it this way.
Take a few more ones here.
You really outdrove Kenny in England, and his championship kind of fell away after that. That must have been a huge psychological win in terms of the championship for you.
Well, I never saw it from that standpoint, to be quite honest with you. I was never beaten down anyway, so I was never in need of a boost, if you see what I mean. Certainly it was a very exciting win for me. The whole thing, lap, lap, and last turn, and pure aggression sort of thing, But that's finished, and, you're about to score one again. So I'm not too sure I would agree with that statement, to be honest.
But certainly you had the edge over you on ovals early in the season.
Yeah, like I said, it was asked early. That was for us a crucial win, because it's a type of racetrack that we hadn't done well. We had the problems on the preseason preparation, and we were still making wholesale changes by that time of the year. And to get a win in a track, you were thinking, maybe we're running the points at some kind of that, or it was really important.
So I don't come down, and I know we were showing in the street circuit in the old court. So that was a very important moment for us, and probably not from a psychological standpoint, but from a strategic standpoint, it really turned the tables here. Being a champion playing this league, it doesn't buy any privileges whatsoever, you know. I spent the whole of November thinking, hey, I'm great, and da-da-da-da-da, and that kind of thing. And then, you get back in the county and think, boy, you know, you got to push hard. we had a couple of accidents like the ones we did and really destroyed two cars, you know, cars at the start of the season. And then, I guess I'm just like anybody else, you know, and that really sunk in, you know. So, well, it's really an effort trying to win another one. There's none of this defending stuff, you know. It's everybody starts from 0 points, and, you know, you got to have every practice session, you got to get out there and stand on the gas, and every qualifying session, you got to try hard, you know, having a teammate like Eddie is a harsh reminder of that, you know. And you think, I'm good, you know, you start looking in the mirror and seeing how good you look, and then Ellie goes out there and you're like, okay, yes, I'm not that good, and you got to keep going, you know.
Jill,
yes.
You mentioned yesterday about Cleveland, that was a pretty big race for you too, wasn't it, when you came back in Cleveland?
Well, to me, I consider that as being probably one of the best races of my career. You know, we started all the way in the back and didn't have the privilege of popping up a few, you know, in those early yellows there, like the guy, like Scotty did to win the race, and just drove hard and passed every single person during the race, you know. I mean, we were fast all day and held up great, and I think we took more people that day than I did in a long time. So I only finished fourth, but to me that was, I've always remembered that race as one of my best races.
Drew, two questions. Did you already see Kenny Bradshaw after the race?
No, I didn't see him, no.
And the other one, what did you discuss with Roberto Moreno yesterday after the driver's briefing?
What were we discussing? But we were trying to get a relatively fast start, you know, so we wouldn't get the road bunched up because it's getting narrow there. That's the problem, you know. Now we got better quickly, and so we just get into trouble. Even if you want to give way or something, that's just a very narrow part.
Mark, final question.
That's a good question. For me, certainly, to be quite honest, achieved a lot more than I could have hoped for. So to me, it's a matter of enjoyment, you know. I get out of bed, you know, like I said the other day, excited, you know. See, when I squeeze the throttle over here, it's a great rush. I still enjoy driving. I love working with the team, you know, and all the engineers from the Honda and from our team. I really enjoy all of the members, you know, my routine of being a race car driver. Yeah. And I guess as long as I enjoy that, you know, and as long as I continue to improve, that's very important to me, you know. I think the day that I see that my best days are behind me, and that's, I think then I have to
you can see the things, but I still think I'm getting better. You know, in fitness wise, I've been working harder and harder, and I'm probably fitter now than I was in my mid-20s. And I love racing, you know. I mean, sometimes I get frustrated. You'd like to be, you know, you can't race as hard as you can. You know, even though you're going for a championship and you win the championship, you think, oh, man, I could have finished third or second or even won the race. So, you know, I guess as long as I have this excitement and as long as I'm any good, I'll keep going. I mean, I really don't want to feel like that my best days are behind me. I think that's the day you gotta really stop.
Jill, the Team Penske Dynasty.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I would love to win the Indy 500, and as long as I put myself there to compete in the championship, I want to win it, you know. I mean, there's no reason to enter, to put your name down there on the list if you don't want to win it, you know. If you really don't care about it, then might as well not be a part of it. But, you know, for me, you know, finish second this year in the Indy 500, and, you know, I love to win that race, and win another championship. I mean, that would be fantastic. I have 100% record with Roger. You know, 3 years, 3 championships, that would be nice.
Jill's played a key role in that dynasty. 111 race wins for Team Penske, 11 national championships, 9 in karts. The challenge of winning 3-0, unparalleled if you can do it.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it would be nice. I feel like I have all the right ingredients behind me, you know. I have probably one of the best racing organizations that has ever existed working with, I'm working for them. So, I think, you know, I mean, certainly, I mean, we just finished this one, but, you know, I think as long as we're seeing business working, we'll be a force to be working with.
Jill, congratulations on being our 2001 champion.
Thanks for joining us once again here on Inside Motorsport. Next week, we'll have all the news from the V8 in New Zealand and a whole bunch more. I hope you can join us then.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of SSFM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.